Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And good afternoon, good evening, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. I'm John Jeffers of the Jeffers Brief. Welcome to my show. All right, let's do a little talking. First, I'm going to give a shout out to a few people who donated and continue to do so on a monthly basis to the show here on Contra Radio Network. If you're looking for the podcast, you can find us on ContraRadioNetwork.podbean.com, or you can listen to us in Utah on KYAH 540 AM. Charles in Nebraska, thank you for your generous donation. Glockstrong, thank you for your monthly donation. A Walker in 412, thank you for your donation. A monthly donation, that is. And to Austin in Wisconsin, thank you for your monthly donation. I do appreciate the rest of you who listen to my show and the shows here on Contra Radio Network. All I ask is $2 a month. $2 a month. That's what I'm asking. Come on. You can do that. We can all afford $2 a month. I mean, geez. I pay a lot more than that. Come on, guys. Help me out here. Throw me a bone. All right. What are we going to talk about today? Well, I'll tell you. So many things, so little time, it seems. True. Let's talk. Oh, what have we got here? So many things. What do I want to start? All right. Here in Chicago, all you hear about on the local news is R. Kelly, R. Kelly. You know what? I don't care. Don't care. It's been going on for well over a decade. You know, all these allegations come out about every 10 years or so about R. Kelly. And then it dies down, you don't hear anything. Now it's back up again. It's like, oh, please, give me a break. Either do something or don't, but get off the guy's ass. But that's me. Let's talk about this. I think what we need to understand, and the wall falls into this, and, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a fan of President Trump. I don't care about what he twitters. I don't care about what he says in his twitters. I care about what he does. Now, there's a difference. I do. Oh, by the way, have you ever noticed that since the president's address, that 8-minute speech he made about the need for the wall, there have been no polls, none whatsoever, about whether people approve of what he said or he did not. But yet, no, they had polls about, oh, Chuck and Nancy. Huh, Chuck and Nancy. Something, just think about something that hit my mind just now. It's like, no. But Chuck and Nancy supposedly had higher ratings. Really? Well, let's not talk about ratings. Let's talk about the polls. After all, the party of social justice loves polls. And I don't mean the ones you dance on either. Though, I don't know, they might. I don't have a clue. All right. Sundance, he wrote this a while back. And I've been holding on to it and holding on to it. I want to put this out there. I want you to understand. Because so many of us do understand it. Or, you know what? Let me rephrase that. Many of us say we understand it, but do we really understand it? Well, I'm going to help you out now. All right. This is what Sundance wrote on November 15th. As I said, I've been holding on to it for a while because I've been kind of waiting to fit it in. And this is going to be a kind of a little bit of everything show. But before we get started, I want to ask you something. You want to be on the show with me? I'm putting together a panel. A weekly panel. All you need is a cell phone. Give me a number to call in. We will record the show, and we will post it. Now you're saying, "Well, I don't know if I'm an expert. I don't know if I know enough." You know what? Let me ask you something. How many of you sit at the diner, sit at the bar, sit at church, and you're talking with your friends about everything we talk about here. You don't have to be an expert, is my point. All you got to do is be able to talk. Put out what you think. You don't have to represent anybody. And I'm going to tell you something. Not everybody on the panel is going to agree with me or anybody. That's okay. You don't have to agree with everything and everybody. Especially with me. I'm just a guy. I do a podcast, and my podcast is recorded, and it's put out there on KYAH. That's what I do. I'm retired. This is what I do. I've been doing it for 4 years now. What year is it? 2019? Going on 5 years. This is what I do. So, this is how you want to get hold of me? You want to do the join me as a co-host on a panel? Give me an email. ContraRadio@live.com. ContraRadio@live.com. In the reference, put down panel. And in the message section, let me know who you are and your contact information. I'll get a hold of you. All you're going to need is a phone. Whether it's a cell phone, the old house phones, I don't care. All right? I promise you this. And you'll like it. If you've been following me now since I first started, because I first started, I was on Blog Talk Radio. And I had some real issues with their service and what I was paying for. So I thought, you know what? Let's pay more for the same service. Now, there are some things I could do on Podbean I couldn't do on BTR. But my point is this. I had people who'd call in constantly during the show. And everybody loved the format. And for some reason, when I left BTR, I wasn't able to figure out a way to do the same thing we did at BTR, but now I have. So I'm reconstituting the panel. That's it. And it's going to be really easy. You don't have to be an expert. You just got to be willing to talk about what you think, what you see, what you hear. It's okay. You don't have to be right. You're not going to get criticized, you know. Hey, will there be disagreements? Probably. But does that mean we hate each other? No. Because as adults, as mature adults, as I was once told by Joe Poe down in Texas, he once told me, he said, an older gentleman, by the way, he says, why don't you ever talk about politics? I said, well, because, you know, politics gets people pissy. And he says, it's like the old rule, when you're at the bar, you don't talk about politics or religion. And you know what he said to me? He said to me this, and I believe it, because I've done it and I've said it, and people go, oh, yeah, okay. And that is this. Mature adults can discuss anything. We can talk about anything, whether it's politics, whether it's religion, whether it's money. We can all talk about it, as long as we're mature adults. That means we don't sit there, and when we don't get our way, we resort to ad hominem attacks. You're saying, John, what's ad hominem? That's a personal attack. That would be me saying, you know, you are such an idiot. You get on the plane with two left wings, all right? That's an ad hominem attack. But, yeah, so don't worry about it, guys. It's not a big deal. I just need a panel. I've got a couple of people, and I need more. Because, let's face it, me and two other people, okay. Now, if you want to download some of the early CRN episodes, Contra Radio Network, there was even all the shows I have now on CRN, you can hear Terry Kaz and I doing it back and forth, and it's okay. And we still have people calling in, so that's great. All right, enough of that. Consider it, and please, as I'm asking for $2 a month, guys, $2 a month. That's all I'm asking. Come on. All right, this is about President Trump versus the big club. Now, some call it globalism or nationalism or versus nationalism. And at other times, it is best described as Wall Street versus Main Street. However, the overarching, bigger picture is a battle over economics and the financial power structures that oppose President Trump. CTH has often said everything is about the economics, because it is. Ask the why question 5 times to any issue, and you will find the root issue is money, power, greed, and control. It is all about the money and the economics. Opposition to President Trump's singular, unique, and transformational reset of the U.S. economic system boils down to a battle against the big club. Every political confrontation is a move within this dynamic. The structural battle is not based on party affiliation. It is based on control and ownership of economics. This confrontation represents the biggest challenge. A brief example would be hundreds of millions of dollars were spent on the 2018 election by owners within the big club. At a surface level, those expenditures are discussed by punditry, thus, oh, we were outspent, insert Kevin McCarthy and or Rhonda McDaniel here. But if you have followed the challenge more closely over the course of years and decades, you have a more substantive understanding of the dynamic. Billionaires on one side of the uniparty spend hundreds of millions in opposition to the mega agenda. Make America Great Again agenda, that is. That agenda, that economic agenda, is the existential threat to the big club's grip on power. So here's a critical aspect. When it comes to the economics, there are no big spending billionaires on the nationalist side of the equation. The interests of Wall Street Democrats and Wall Street Republicans are based on globalism. Wall Street, not Main Street. In the 2018 midterm election, special interest groups representing the multinational Wall Street financial interest of the big club spent massive amounts of money through various PACs and funding mechanisms. The objective was to undermine and reduce the ability of their adversary, President Trump. In this fight, there are no nationalist mega donors to counterbalance that spending initiative other than you, the people. Each of the lost congressional districts were targeted by multinational big club. Until the mega base gets a firm understanding of how this works, opposition will continue to succeed. There is no mega PAC or financial alliance system funded by Wall Street billionaires who support the principles of economic nationalism to counteract this dynamic. It just doesn't exist. In the globalist multinational Wall Street dynamic, the big club DNC donor base and the big club RNC donor base have mutual self-interest. Within this interest, President Trump is their unified opposition. The only defeating mechanism that could structurally override this dynamic is an independent billionaire and a massive amount of tax-paying small donors. Ordinary middle-class Americans who can supplement the financial arsenal. Think back to 2015 and 16, and you will see the single successful reference for this reality at work. Everything is about the economics. The big club opposition to President Trump is based on financial best interest. That opposition is not bound to a political party ideology. It is an ideology based on economics. In essence, this is the structural economic battle that is being waged politically. Another intensely visible example of this dynamic is the big club donor base within the GOP supporting Kevin McCarthy and, adding, Representative Liz Cheney in Wyoming, who was chosen yesterday to serve as House Republican Conference Chair, the number three GOP spot in the House. In the economic battle, the successful defeat and diminishment of a House Republican political body is more about creating a vulnerability and creating a bigger opportunity to remove the existential threat President Trump's economic policies represent. Decades of financial policy were intentionally structured to benefit of the big club and multinational Wall Street alliance represented by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Tom Donahue. This is not a Republican versus Democrat issue. This is a larger confrontation between those who hold financial power and a singular person, President Donald Trump, who is determined to remove that grip. Now, in headlines today, big club member Alan Greenspan declares that President Trump's tariff policies are, quote, insane. This expression by Greenspan is directly representative of everything noted that I've talked about so far. So, however, conversely, the outcome of those mega tariff policies are exactly what we said they would be. Now, the BLS released information yesterday quantifying inflation across all sectors. Food. The food index declined by 0.1% in October as the index for food at home fell 0.2%. And the index for food away from home rose to 0.1%. Three of the six major grocery store food group indexes declined in October. Fruits and vegetables index fell 0.7% in October, its third consecutive decline. The index for fresh fruits fell 1.8%, while the fresh vegetables index increased 0.3%. The index for cereals and bakery products fell 0.6%, and the index for dairy and related products declined 0.4%. Notice how the prices for food are dropping as the Meganomic trade policies of President Trump are being carried out. Notice how the timing of the decline is directly related to the tariff actions and the counteractions by the targeted countries. President Trump is fracturing the multinational corporate-controlled market, and his trade policies are beginning to reconstitute supply and demand pricing in a nationalist market. This inflation data, specifically within the fastest sector to show indicators, which is most perishable, that's the fastest turnover, highlights what we have been explaining for years. The biggest lie in modern economics, willingly spread and maintained by corporate media, is that a system of global markets still exists. It doesn't. Every element of global economic trade is controlled and exploited by massive institutions, multinational banks, and multinational corporations. Institutions like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and World Bank control trillions of dollars in economic activity. Underneath that economic activity, there are people who hold the reins of power over the outcomes. Now, these individuals and groups are the stakeholders in direct opposition to the principles of national economics. The process of charging the U.S. consumer more for a product that under normal national market conditions would cost less is a process called exfiltration of wealth, and it is never discussed. To control the market price, some contracted product may even be secured and shipped with the intent to allow it to sit idle or rot. It's all about controlling the price and maximizing the profit equation. To gain the same $1 profit, a widget multinational might have to sell 20 widgets in El Salvador, say at 25 cents each, or two widgets in the U.S. at $2.50 each. Think of the process like the historic reference of OPEC. Only in the modern era, massive corporations are playing the role of OPEC, and it's not oil being controlled. It's almost everything, including food. Yes, President Trump, the man and his policy team, is an existential threat to the elitist hierarchy of things well beyond the borders of the D.C. swamp. In the era of explaining the complex, it's a planetary economic reset almost too massive and consequential to encapsulate in words. There are massive international corporate and financial interests who are inherently at risk of President Trump's America First economic trade platform. Believe it or not, President Trump is up against an entire world economic establishment, and as a result of Trump's successes, the Fed is now having to modify its baseline assumptions to reevaluate the shifting new economy. And what has the Fed done? Oh, we got to raise interest rates. Why? Well, I don't know. We got to raise interest rates. The fact is, they know if they raise interest rates, it plays on the markets and it really causes a real problem. It's a real issue. Well, it's true. I don't make this stuff up, guys. I just don't. I'm not that smart. Who do I want to talk to here? No. You know what? Let me take a break. This is from my friend, Gator. You're going to like Gator.
To all of the podcasters out there who are recording great content shows but are lacking the know-how or the time to edit your episodes into a concise finished product, I'm here to help. Hi, I'm Gator Gaynor, and I've been producing radio shows for a long time, and I've recently stepped into the podcast producing world to assist people just like you. So if you're needing someone to take your recorded audio and make it into a produced package that's ready for distribution, get in touch and let's figure out a plan that works for you. You can hear an example of my work on the Prepping 2.0 podcast, as well as on my SoundCloud page. Just search for Gator Gaynor. That's GatorGaynor. Find me on Facebook and email me at gator.gaynor@gmail.com. That's GATOR.GAYNOR@gmail.com.
Shelby Gallagher here, letting you know the second book in my book series, A Great State, is set for release on October 28th. Book 2, The Aftermath, is a continuation of the story from The Divide, where our main character, Julie, a single mother, preps for a collapse. Her story is one of overcoming, strength, and prepping as her community crumbles around her. Sound like recent headlines? Book 2 continues the story with tragic details of what life will be like for those who don't prepare. Pre-order your copy now at my website, agreatstate.com.
Yes, and you can catch Prepping 2.0 right here on CRN and on KYAH. Here's something, you know, what do I want to talk about real quick here? I got so many stuff I want to throw out there. Let me see, what do we got? Okay, yeah. Where do we start? Nah, I don't want to do that because that's not going to work off. What's this? Here's something from Human Events. Ann Coulter. I don't know if you like Ann Coulter. I like her. Mainly because when she comes on, liberals lose their mind. I mean, not that there's a lot there to lose, but they lose it. And she wrote, this is pretty cool, I like it. It was written yesterday, on January 9th. Media throw everything at the wall to see what sticks. And she writes, now that Trump has finally turned to the campaign promise that won him the election, build a wall and deport illegals, the Democrats, the media, and even most Republicans are hysterical. Just remember, they were hysterical about Ronald Reagan too. You don't change history by being a follower, particularly if the people you're following are people are unimaginative, go-with-the-flow company men and women. When President Reagan implemented the strategy that won the Cold War, he was opposed by the entire media as well as foreign policy, you know, experts in both parties. The New York Times, which is probably best read in an outhouse, right next to the Washington Post, produced nonstop denunciations of his dangerous policies. There were propaganda movies like The Day After, terrifying Americans about a Soviet strike on our country. By the way, good movie. I watch it at least once a year. It's not The Day After Tomorrow. It's just called The Day After. You can find it on YouTube. Witless college students demanded cyanide pills be stocked in campus healthcare clinics on the grounds that Reagan was going to get us all nuked. Where have we heard that before? That's right. 2016, 2017, people are screaming about nuclear war with North Korea. Yeah. Only after Reagan's policies succeeded did the same hysterics say, ho-hum, no big deal. We always knew the Soviet Union was a paper tiger. Yeah. Frantically rewriting history, they claimed Reagan had merely continued the policies of his predecessors. The truth about their 8-year primal scream is helpfully assembled in the new smash bestseller, Treason, Liberal Treachery from the Cold War to the War on Terrorism. The Democrats, the media, and most of the Republican Party are as fanatically opposed to Trump's ideas about illegal immigration as they were to Reagan's idea about winning the Cold War. Like Reagan, Trump has only the people on his side. Unlike Reagan, he doesn't seem as confident that he is right. So the people need to be louder. That's you and me. By the you and me is my emphasis. All we're getting from the media on immigration is an avalanche of lies neurotically repeated by people citing one another. Polls show Americans don't want a wall. We're a nation of immigrants. Immigrants commit less crime than the native-born. Studies show black Americans are not hurt by illegal immigration. Every one of these claims is a lie. People assume a minimal standard of decency on others and think to themselves, well, Joe Scarbo wouldn't say that if it weren't true. Yeah, he would. What viewers don't understand is how lazy media personalities are. They are merely quoting what someone told them. They don't know. Their expertise consists of memorizing a set of talking points, like ABBA memorializing the symbols to English words without knowing what they meant. If journalists allowed follow-up questions you could ask, how do you know that? The answer would be, well, I heard it from a guy at Vox. The media go to extremely biased sources. They know nothing, so they're not in a position to challenge them. And even if they were, they wouldn't because they're on the same team. Now, after a New York Times reporter tracked me down for a quote about the wall, I gave him the following, but he chose not to run with it. Why would the newspaper of record present the opposition's side honestly? Well, there are a million reasons we want a wall, but here are five of them. The Simpson-Mazzoli Act, number one. The Simpson-Mazzoli Act, passed almost 30 years ago to the day Trump was elected president, came with elaborate promises that it would put an end to illegal immigration. In fact, 30 to 40 million more illegals have poured into our country since then. Number two, notwithstanding the vast number of illegal alien valedictorians, there are also criminals, drunk drivers, drug cartel members, and desperately poor people consuming government services meant for the least among us and driving down the wages for our working class. Number three, we need a better method. Number four, walls work. See Israel. Number five, if we don't get it done now, we never will. Trump is our last chance. But instead of explaining to the Times reporter or Times readers, while Trump's promise to build a wall shook the political foundation world to its foundation, the newspaper trotted out campaign advisor Sam Nunberg's boast that he invented build the wall because Trump's mind tends to wander. It was only a dumb talking point, you see, not a serious campaign pledge. This is like claiming you are the guy who invented an umbrella when it rains. I'm sorry, Sam, but you're not getting royalties for that. Building a wall, it's kind of an obvious idea for protecting a border. Not only have walls been used from time immemorial to defend borders, but those three precise words have been used to describe what should happen at our specific border thousands of times before Trump used them, according to a quick Nexus search. The current DNC talking point against the wall is that it is medieval solution to a 21st century problem. Turn on MSNBC or CNN right now after you get done with my show, and you'll hear someone saying it. So are wheels. Are Democrats taking tires off their cars? A roof is a medieval solution. How about Nancy Pelosi replace the one over her house with new technology, like a drone? Drones won't keep anything out, but at least she can say who's coming in seconds before it drops on her head. Medievalism won. Pelosi, nothing. I think it's right. And Ronald Reagan, he warned us about this day, that this day could come. You know that? It's true. At CNS News, Tom Kilgannon reminded us of this, and I remember. When he's talking about it, I'm remembering, I remember that he was talking, he did a speech then. I'm warning of an eradication of the American memory that could result, ultimately, in an erosion of the American spirit. So cautioned President Ronald Reagan 30 years ago today, January 10th, when he gave his farewell address to the nation. Mr. President, you were right. A new generation of Americans doesn't seem to fully appreciate America, her history and heroes, the promise of opportunity. The promise of opportunity is not the promise of equal outcome. It's the promise of opportunity in itself. The understanding of freedom, or the concepts of citizenship, shared responsibility, or the rule of law. According to a recent report on the state of American patriotism, 46% of young Americans aged 14 to 37 disagree that America is the greatest country in the world. And 38% of the same cohort said they are not proud of America's history. Have there been some dark periods in American history? Yes. And it's true with everything. Dark periods. It happens. It's how we learn from it and take and go forward. As for the ones who don't think America's the greatest country in the world, ain't nobody begging you to stay in the United States of America. You can pack your crap and get out any time. Is nobody begging you to stay? Well, it's true. So that'd be okay. 46% say that this is not the greatest country in the world. Feel free. Get up and leave. You can go to Venezuela, where you love socialism. Why don't you try living it in a while? We'll see how fast you change your mind. So, anyways, our last three presidents, Bush, Obama, and Trump, have been dismissed by opponents as illegitimate, increasing the political divide. In the case of President Trump, a hostile media has joined the chorus, driving trust in government to historic lows of 18%, according to the Pew Research Center. A recent Gallup poll shows that since President Trump took office, 16% of Americans overall and 22% of Trump's opponents wish to permanently leave the United States. Hold on. Stop the presses. Again, ain't nobody begging you to stay. Get out and take the Hollywood pretenders with you. The Hollywood professional pretenders, please pack up and leave too. For these people, devotion to country is a zero-sum game, contingent upon whether or not their candidate wins. While the press and political opposition hated Reagan, today he's remembered affectionately by all and cited by historians as one of our best presidents. His popularity helped to create a resurgence of patriotism and a restoration of national morale that had plummeted during the Carter years and which helped him be an effective leader. "I never won anything. You didn't win for me," Reagan thanked his supporters. In his last Oval Office address, Reagan advocated that each of us strive for an informed patriotism. That's what CRN is. That's what the Jeffers Brief is. That's what the Prepper Guy is. That's what Prepper 2.0 is. Informed patriotism. Thank you, Mr. President. "And we will instill in our kids an unambivalent appreciation of America so that they will better understand what America represents in the long history of the world." Now, Ronald Reagan loved this country and her people. It would break his heart to know that in modern America, our past is being rewritten for our school children or not taught at all. Giants of history are removed from public square without debate or due process. National symbols are openly protested, and vulgarity is the mother tongue of political discourse. In today's world, angry mobs would confront Reagan and Tip O'Neill during their after-work happy hours. Reagan spoke from the Oval Office nearly 36 times during his 8 years as president, to lead, mourn, and explain. He spoke regularly about his economic policies, the threat of communism, and his negotiations with Soviet leaders to reduce nuclear weapons. His most memorable Oval Office addresses included those on October 27, 1983, when he mourned the loss of 241 Marines killed in Beirut on January 28, 1986, when he delayed his scheduled State of the Union address to speak about the 7 astronauts who slipped the surly bonds of Earth to explore the heavens but lost their lives in the space shuttle explosion. While his farewell address is not as well known as these, it may be his most important. "For we now confront the very problems about which Reagan warned us, a decline of patriotism, a loss of national pride, less respect for America's governing institutions, and a lack of unifying purpose." On this topic, Charles Kessler, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, suggests we are in a cold civil war, evidenced by the fact that America is torn increasingly between two rival constitutions, two cultures, and two ways of life. The reasons we find ourselves in this situation are many, but as Reagan pointed out, the entertainment and education industries bear much responsibility. Reagan remembered a time when you could get a sense of patriotism from school. Today in Maryland, the Montgomery County School Board is considering a proposal to allow students excused absences so they can participate in political protest. He recalled a time when you could get a sense of patriotism from popular culture, but that was before professional athletes routinely disparaged the national anthem. The most recent 2014 National Assessment of Education Progress shows only 18% of the 8th grade students pass or possess a basic knowledge of U.S. history, and less than a quarter of students are proficient in civics. That means less than a quarter know how the government is supposed to operate and what the government is. Knowing our past, having hope in our future, and understanding how our system of government works are some of the tools our students need if we are to keep America a republic. If you want to know more about Tom Kilgannon, he is the president of the Freedom Alliance. It's a nonprofit organization that provides support to America's military families and advocates for a strong national defense. Is he right? I think he is. I think we all see that as patriots. What else have we got here? Yes. Okay. Scott McKay. I like him. He's over at the American Spectator. And he wrote about Chuck and Nancy. How sad they are. And they are. You see, well, let's talk about it. Trump made his case, and then the Democrats make unflattering internet memes. So who do you think is going to win the shutdown? But the exchange between President Trump and his would-be tormentors, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi's caddy, and Nancy herself, amid the current government shutdown appears to have been pretty laughably one-sided. It doesn't take a partisan Republican to see that. The president didn't yell or scream. He didn't throw any bombs. And he didn't come off as the same guy he does on Twitter. What he did was to state a pretty cogent case for why the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border is untenable and why something needs to be done to put a cork in the sex and drug trafficking and mass illegal immigration flowing across it. For Trump, that means constructing a physical barrier along the border where it's been suggested such a project be completed. This is anything but a new idea, mind you. It's already been authorized by Congress. You remember the Secure Fence Act of 2006? Which is part of the Bush-era push to do something about illegal immigration. Back then, conservatives were furious at the Republican Party for its insistence on giving the Democrats a free path to millions of captive voters via amnesty for illegals. But the real travesty was the Secure Fence Act passed with overwhelming support. 283 to 138 in the House, including 64 Democrats, and with 80 votes in the Senate, including that one of Chuck Schumer, and of the 800-plus miles of physical barrier on the border it authorized, only 589 of them were actually constructed before the Obama administration flouted a congressional authorization and stopped the project. You see, it's already been done. Uncle Chuck and Aunt Nancy. Guess what? They've already voted for this. But because it's a Republican that wants to get it done, oh no, we can't let that happen. And the Democrats have fought fiscal appropriations to construct that physical barrier ever since. Republicans couldn't get it done when Barack Obama was in the White House, and now they can't get it done so long as Schumer has 40 votes in the Senate to block the appropriation, which is why there's a government shutdown with no end in sight. And the Democrats' pals in the mainstream media, you know, the Democratic lapdogs, are doing everything they can to help Chuck and Nancy, who couldn't seem to help themselves Tuesday night, given the creepy optics of their wide-eyed American Gothic presentation, win the messaging war. Except, I'm not sure the talking heads are helping. When Slate runs a post claiming Trump's speech was too effective and Oakley suggesting networks censor the president, and when CNN is suggesting that he be carried on tape-delayed basis so they can edit his words to splice their own narratives, that's a bit of an admission Trump is winning the argument. Yes, he is. Of course he's winning the argument. How could he not? What is this argument over? It's a partial government shutdown, which affects the lives mostly of Democrats who work for the government because of a Democratic refusal to appropriate less than $6 billion and a $4 trillion federal budget for a physical barrier to protect the border from sex and drug traffickers, terrorists, and trespassers, many of whom are violent criminals. Now, by any objective judgment, this shutdown is a complete loser for the Democrats over the long term, especially if it's their first item of business for them taking over the House majority. It makes Pelosi and her leadership team look utterly incapable of governance, an impression which is not diminished when the most prominent new members of their caucuses are comically stupid Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the frightening anti-Americans Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, the latter of newfound impeach the MF-er fame. Oh, by the way, little Rashida, in 2016, she was removed from the audience of a Trump speech. So, and therefore, she's a threat to the president. So when the president comes to Congress to do the State of the Union or anything else, she should not be allowed anywhere near him. She's proved herself to be a danger to the president of the United States. Oh, well, anyways, Trump held a meeting with Chuck and Nancy Wednesday, and it didn't last long. As soon as it ended, the president took to Twitter to give a recap. Quote, just left the meeting with Chuck and Nancy, a total waste of time. I asked what is going to happen in 30 days if I quickly open things up. Are you going to approve border security, which includes a wall or steel barrier? Nancy said no. I said bye-bye, nothing else works. End quote. There's an old adage applicable here, which is the party at the negotiation who can most easily get up from the table is usually the one who wins. That party is clearly Trump. His argument is not only the clear one, it's also a core argument which got him elected. It's a key pillar of sovereignty that a nation must control its borders. There are crucial, fundamental issues of national security being unaddressed by the current federal policy, and it's the president's job to bring that chaos under control. And for him to begin effectively doing so will cost far less than the foreign aid budgeted for the countries from which the problem chiefly comes. And if the Democrats continue to resist, there will be federal employees, most of whom are Democrats, whose paychecks are delayed. Who, besides those federal employees, actually cares about the shutdown? Almost nobody. In fact, there are lots of Americans who remember the 8 years Obama was in office, in which the richest counties in America, mostly in the D.C. suburbs, where those federal employees live, while the rest of the country wallowed in the worst economic recovery America has ever seen. Sympathy is going to be in short supply. And if the shutdown stretches even longer, its relative political effects could become even more lopsided. By the end of February, the shutdown might just begin interfering with food stamps. And which party do you think will be under more pressure over that possibility? Again, Trump is a guy who can walk away from the table. Most of his supporters are happy to stick with him amid the shutdown fight, and border security is a 70-30 issue in his favor. Chuck and Nancy might have the media on their side, but unlike the previous Bush-era iteration of the Republican Party this time, there isn't an irrational fear of bad press coverage on Trump's part. By now, he expects universally bad notices, and he knows those won't kill him. The whole thing is plainly egregiously stupid on Chuck and Nancy's part. It's a massive own goal. If the Democrats weren't fools, they'd have given Trump his appropriation for the wall with a big show of how they're reasonable and responsible and willing to work with the president, and then spent the next 2 years messaging about what an ineffective boondoggle it is. Now, every time there's a terrible incident, involving an illegal alien, like the atrocious case of California Police Corporal Ranil Singh, slaughtered by a Mexican gangster and multiple deportee named Gustavo Perez Arriaga, the country is to blame Chuck, Nancy, and the Democrats for blocking construction of the wall. Trump sees this, if Chuck and Nancy can't. That's why he's happy to ride the storm out. Increasingly, they won't be. As for the rest of us, we'll just sit and enjoy the show. Are they right? I think so. I do think so. What else have we got here? No. That was kind of interesting. Wow. What do you think so far? Yes? Like it? I thought so. What else have we got going on? Nope. Oh, here. Let's try black metal firearms. Yes, those are scary things.
Black metal firearms are a couple guys I know personally and friends of mine that put together some great accessories for all your firearms needs. Everything that I've seen them do is just top-notch and very nice looking. BlackMetalFirearms.com. Check them out. I think you'll be glad you did. Go to Facebook, Black Metal Firearms. They got a great page there too. Learn more about the workmanship and the craftsmanship they put into every accessory and every build they do.
All right. That, in case you don't know, that was Mark Boyle, host of The Prepper Guy, The Mark Boyle Show. I think you guys will like that. Oh, we'll see. Well, what happened? Jeez. Yeah, hold on. I'm just going on some stuff real quick. No. They're doing some quick looking here. No. Yeah, let's see. What did this fool say? If you know Al Green, he's a Democrat from Texas. He said on the House floor Wednesday that he will focus on impeaching the unfit president while his colleagues work on actual legislative issues. Oh, what a complete buffoon. Here, you want to hear him? You want to hear him? This is from C-SPAN. Let's listen to this fool.
For 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, and still I rise. I rise, Madam Speaker, on behalf of Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution. I rise, Madam Speaker, on behalf of the more than 40% of people in this country who believe that an unfit president ought to be impeached. I rise on behalf of the many people who believe that somehow, the voices of those who favor impeachment have been muted. And I want you to know, Madam Speaker, and to those who are listening, I want you to know that there is at least one person in the Congress of the United States of America who believes that an unfit president ought to be impeached.
There you go. Right from the idiot's mouth. What else we got here? Oh, what's this one? Oh, this is good. Oh, that's what we got there. The Democratic Representative Hill, toddler Trump's tantrum shutdown is political terrorism, I say. Political terrorism, I say. You must... Oh, what else we got here? Is this it? Let's see if we got it here. Let's see if I've got the right clip here.
He says senators will not vote on any bill the president does not support, and the White House has threatened to veto legislation to reopen individual agencies. Just think about that. The White House has threatened to veto legislation to reopen agencies and put Americans back to work, or at least pay those Americans who are working what they are due. Think about that. Joining me now to talk about all of this is California Democratic Congresswoman Katie Hill. Congressman, good to see you again. Thank you for being with us.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
What are you hearing from your constituents on this? Because the president's digging in and says people support him, including those people who are furloughed or who are working without pay. Not actually what we tend to hear. In fact, we've been talking to people across this country. We're not hearing that at all.
I can tell you I've spoken to a number of federal employees. My district is full of them, and not a single one of them has told me that they are happy with the shutdown, that they're fine with the shutdown. Every single one of them is terrified of missing their paychecks tomorrow. Remember, 80% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. It's no different for my constituents, for our federal workers. There's national security at stake. This is a dangerous situation. The backbone of my district is aviation and aerospace, so deeply impacted industries, and this is completely unacceptable.
Yeah, a little later in the show, I'm going to talk to Joe DePete. He's the president of the Airline Pilots Association. They are very concerned about FAA and about air traffic controllers and what's going on. But, Congresswoman, the problem is the president seems to be okay with settling in, at least for a little while, on this issue. He does seem to be trying to convey the idea that Republicans are united on this. I'm really trying to find Mitch McConnell to see where he is on all of this thing. But we are seeing some cracks. We are seeing a number of members of Congress and senators on the Republican side suggesting that they're looking for another alternative, not ready to sit it out on an endlessly long government shutdown.
Listen, it comes down to the public at this point. Public putting pressure at every single level to the legislators that are representing them to...
Yeah, whatever. You know what? The bottom line is the Democrats are going to lose this. They can't win it. Cannot win it. Uh-oh. You know what time it is, don't you? It's time for our favorite one. Let me see. Where is it? Da-da-da-da-da. Let me see. Where is this? It's time for social justice. Let's see what they're up to this week. It should be fun. Ah, yes, the Looney Tunes of social justice. Well, this, let's see, what do we got today? Kenyon College adds diversity and inclusion to tenure guidelines for professors. Oh, this is a good one. How about this? Los Angeles Teachers Union postpones a strike to avert a court-ordered delay. Okay, most of government up and running despite during the shutdown. Some workers without savings suffer. Well, it happens. You know, look, you work at the TSA, you're making what? You're not making that much. So, but, oh well, that's another issue. Who else we got here? The ACLU says special badges for bad students violates Privacy Act. The ACLU is fighting back against a new policy at an Arizona high school that requires students with low grades to wear a special red badge. Here's another one. The European Union grants university researchers 10 million euros to study the Islamic Quran. Why? The EU has granted 10 million euros to university researchers studying the role of the Islamic holy book in the intellectual and religious development of countries across the continent. All you got to do is look at the massive influx of, you know, the refugees to get an idea of what they're really going on there. Ugh. Doesn't need 10 million euros. The University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry is rewarding its medical staff for attending a seminar on microaggressions by qualifying them for a discounted rate on malpractice insurance through the medical center. A microaggression. Please. I can't even take it half the time. Here we go. The sex tech company, Laura DiCarlo, has accused the International Consumer Electronics Show, which is CES, it's going on right now in Vegas, of sexism and double standards after the show revoked the company's innovation award for a robotic female sex toy. Okay. And of course, we've all seen this stupid thing. According to the APA announcement, the release of guidelines for psychological practice with boys and men comes after a review of more than 40 years of research showing that men who are not emotionally expressive are damaged and end up with serious behavior problems, declaring traditional masculinity is harmful. Yeah. Here, take here. They can take this from this. here, take this from this traditional masculine male here. You can F-O and die. There you go. The new president of Planned Parenthood took to Twitter Tuesday to finally confirm her organization's core mission is abortion. That's right. Planned Parenthood president says abortion is our core mission. So, if you really think about it, abortion is the leading cause of death in the United States. I believe the last count was 41 million. The German Populist Party member of parliament slams leftist parties for encouraging violence. The Alternative for Germany member of parliament Peter Beistrun has slammed the left, claiming they encourage violence following an alleged assassination attempt on the chairman of the Populist Party's Bremen branch. And of course, teachers' unions tout radical hashtag Red for Ed movement as strike looms in Los Angeles. In a post at Truth in American Education, parent activists Dennis Ian and Michelle Moore write that because of the radical shift leftward that they have taken, teachers' unions are actually at war with parents. Are they? Is it possible that they are right? Oh, what do we got here? Oh, here we go. You'll love this one, too. The University of Maine is to host a racial justice educator to explain Waking Up White. The University of Maine at Fort Kent will host racial justice educator Debbie Irving, who wrote a book that the university says can help white people to quickly grasp modern racism's inner workings, because only white people can be racist. All right, let me say something here. There has been racism since time began. And you're not, it's part of human nature. It's ugly, but it's there. And yes, each of us individually can resist that. You don't need something ridiculous like this and everything else that's going on with it. All right. Historian says European art exhibits should be reconsidered due to modern extremist groups. All right. One historian argued last week that museums should reconsider their European art exhibits in light of the rise of extremist groups around the globe. A mother has been kicked out of a British pub for transphobic T-shirt. A British mother was kicked out of her local pub after a complaint that her T-shirt, emblazoned with the dictionary definition of woman, was offensive to transgender people. Guys, I'm not making this up. I'm telling you. I'm not smart enough to make this up. I'm just not, guys. I'm really not. We got time for a couple more. Ah, here you go. Right here in the tyranny state of Illinois. The University of Illinois campus police tell students to report acts of intolerance. The University of Illinois campus police told students that they should report acts of intolerance to the university's bias assessment team, including any comments that make an individual feel unsafe or unwelcome. Here, try this one. Get out. Get out of the University of Illinois. If you got a kid there, get him out. Get him to a different school. Idiots. I can't stand it. I just can't. Here's a poll. Only 39% of service members approve of transgender troops. A poll of U.S. Service members and veterans finds only 39% approve of transgender individuals serving in the military. Me? Hey, if you can stop a bullet, more power to you. And that's almost the time we have out here. Okay, let me wrap this up. Thank you for listening to the Jeffers Brief. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy evening or to listen to me, especially on KYAH 540 AM or on the Contra Radio Network at podbean.com. You can find all of our episodes there. Please, if you would, consider $2 a month donation. That's what I'm asking, $2 a month donation. You can find the donation button right there on the Podbean account. I appreciate it if you do that. And we will talk to you again next week, and soon we'll have that panel in, and we can start a new phase here on the Jeffers Brief. I'm John Jeffers saying thank you for listening, and have a good